Hi,
this is Cody, reading a literary synopsis of the story The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, first of the Chronicles of Narnia series by C.S. Lewis. Type of work, fantasy and spiritual allegory. Setting, during World War II, a country house outside London. Principal characters, Lucy, a very truthful girl, Edmund and Susan, her brother and sister, Peter, another brother, the eldest and bravest of the four, Aslan, Narnia's majestic ruler, the White Witch, an evil enchantress who has cast a spell on Narnia. Story overview. One rainy day, in a large house in the heart of the English countryside, Lucy Pevensey entered the enchanted world of Narnia through a magical wardrobe. The four Pevensey children had been visiting the professor in his old house to escape the bombs of World War II that were devastating London. Like all children, they were curious and had decided to explore the many rooms of the house. Lucy, the youngest, had come across the wardrobe at the end of a long, bare room. Oddly enough, she couldn't feel the back of the wardrobe with her hands. Somewhere in the distance, a dim light glowed. As she followed the light, the fur coats in the wardrobe slowly turned to trees. The light turned out to be an ordinary lamppost. However, Lucy discovered the land of Narnia was anything but ordinary when she spied a faun, half-man, and half-goat hurry past carrying books and parcels. He invited Lucy to tea, and she accepted. They had such a pleasant time, until the faun reluctantly explained that he was under orders to turn any children appearing in Narnia over to the White Witch. Sensing Lucy was a good person, though, he helped her return. At last, Lucy found herself safe in the spare room. Though it seemed as if she had been gone for a dreadfully long time, no one had even missed her. Furthermore, they didn't believe her story. During a game of hide-and-seek on yet another rainy day, Lucy and Edmund both hid inside the wardrobe, and suddenly they both found themselves in Narnia. Lucy started off to visit her friend, Mr. Tumnus, leaving Edmund behind. As he surveyed the area, Edmund came face to face with the White Witch. Knowing a child's weaknesses, she fed him the sweetest and best candy in the world, Turkish Delight. Edmund ate and ate. The more he devoured, however, the more he wanted to eat. In this manner, she persuaded him to reveal much about his brothers and sisters. She seemed particularly interested and knowing that there were four children in all. When the Turkish delight was finally gone, Edmund greedily asked for more. But all the witch gave him was a sweet smile, and the command that he must bring his brothers and sisters to her castle between the two hills on the western horizon. Only then could he have more. In fact, he could have as much as he wanted. Later, as was bound to happen, all the children found themselves in Narnia via the wardrobe in the spare room. At once, Peter lashed out at Edmund for his nastiness to Lucy. After this unpleasant scene, Lucy suggested they all go and see her friend, Mr. Tumnus. But as they reached the mouth of the Faun's Cave, they came upon a horrible display of destruction. Mr. Tumnus's door had been ripped off its hinges, and the contents of the cave were strewn out and broken. There was no sight of the dear faun, but there was a note left behind stating that Mr. Tumnus, guilty of high treason against the Queen of Narnia, had been arrested, taken before the Queen, and turned to stone. The note was signed by Fenris Ulf, a huge and terrifying wolf, and captain of the secret police. Lucy could not bear to think of her good friend standing as a cold, lifeless statue in the palace of the White Witch. There was only one thing to do. The fawn had saved her life. Now she must save his. Susan and Peter were ready to join her, but Edmund had no intention of doing any such thing. His thoughts were only of Turkish delight. Still, he decided to tag along. It would be difficult finding the White Witch all by himself. The children encountered a beaver who had been expecting them. He told them of how they might find the fawn, and about a legend of four children who would sit on the four thrones, ending the reign of the White Witch. "And another thing," he added, "Aslan is on the move." Never had the children felt so much power and dignity at the sound of a name, and they eagerly listened to Mr. Beaver recite another old prophecy about the great lion Aslan. "Wrong will be right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death, and when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again." "Oh," said Susan, "is he safe? I feel quite nervous about meeting a lion." "Safe," replied Mr. Beaver. "Who said anything about safe? Course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you. Word has been sent that you are to meet him, tomorrow if you can, at the stone table." For hours the children and Mr. Beaver discussed Aslan and their plans to rescue the fawn. Suddenly, they noticed that there was one less person at the table. Edmund was gone. Mr. Beaver claimed to have seen treachery in Edmund's eyes from the start. Surely he had eaten of the White Witch's Turkish delight and was under her spell. "We've not a moment to lose," the beaver cried. "The White Witch will be here as soon as she gets word from Edmund and will try to cut us off from the stone table." Meanwhile, Edmund had indeed located the witch and had told her everything he knew about his siblings, Mr. and Mrs. Beaver, and Aslan. At once, she dispatched Fenris Ulf, along with his best deputy, to storm the party at the home of the beavers. In the meantime, she planned to hinder them from reaching the stone table. Taking Edmund along for the ride, she and her dwarves headed out in her sled, pulled by reindeer, with bells attached to their harness. Peter, Susan, Lucy, and the beavers had already snatched up a few belongings and were traveling along the frozen riverbed that led to the stone table. They pressed forward through the intricate patterns of shadow, snow, and ice, shining in the moonlight, hoping the falling snow would cover their tracks and mask their scent from the witch's ferocious wolves. When Lucy finally could go no farther, they sought shelter in a secluded cave. There, safe and warm, they slept, but were soon suddenly roused by the sound of bells rending the stillness of the night. They all held their breath in fear, thinking the witch had detected them. What joy, what relief, to find that it was only Father Christmas. This meant that the witch's spell was breaking, calling the children sons of Adam and daughters of Eve. Father Christmas presented each of them with a special present. Peter was given a sword and shield, Susan a quiver and bow, along with a horn that would always summon help. And then he placed in Lucy's hand a shining diamond vial containing an elixir that would miraculously heal any wounds. Alas, the snow began to melt, which flowed the witch's sled, enabling the children to reach Aslan and the stone table in safety. Beholding the mighty lion in all his glory, the children were first afraid to approach Aslan. After some nervous discussion, the duty of addressing him fell to the eldest, Peter. He drew his sword, raised it to a salute, and said, "We have come, Aslan." Aslan's regal yet gentle voice boomed in reply, "Welcome, Peter, son of Adam." Surrounded by a half-circle of centaurs and leopards, and a host of other good creatures nearby, he prepared a festival of music and delicious food. Aslan then sent forth his swiftest centaurs to recapture Edmund, which they succeeded in doing. But the White Witch was by no means content to lose the kingdom of Narnia without a fight. That night she visited Aslan under the white flag of truce to play her final, most sinister hand. First, she demanded the death of Edmund according to the laws of deep magic since the dawn of time. This deep magic declared that every traitor belonged to her as lawful prey. For every treachery committed, she had a right to kill, to exact her justice. Some of Aslan's followers gasped in disbelief. Others challenged the witch to try taking Edmund from them. Susan, utterly horrified, turned to Aslan for guidance. "Isn't there something you can do to work against the deep magic?" "Working against the Emperor's magic?" he replied, with something of a frown on his face. Then Aslan gave out a stern warning. "Fall back, all of you, and I will talk to the witch alone." Minutes later, he returned to announce that the witch had consented to renounce her claim on Edwin's life. This news brought great relief and cheer. Lucy and Susan found themselves unable to sleep that night, worrying and wondering. In the morning, they decided to go to Aslan. At first, they couldn't find him. Then Susan pointed towards the trees at the edge of their camp. A lion with his head bowed low was trudging, slowly, heavily, toward the hill of the stone table. When he spied them, the great lion turned and said, "Oh, children, children, why are you following me?" Lucy responded in earnest, "We couldn't sleep. Please, we may come with you, wherever you are going." Seeing the love in the children's eyes, Aslan could not rebuke them. "I should be glad of company tonight. Yes, you may come, but you must promise to stop when I tell you. And after that, leave me to go on alone." The girls promised. They walked on through the darkness, stroking the glorious fur of Aslan's golden mane to comfort him. Then when it was time for him to proceed unaccompanied. But Lucy and Susan just couldn't return to camp. Something awful was about to happen. Hiding in the bushes, they witnessed the saddest, most horrible scene of their entire lives. Aslan made his way to the stone table, where the witch and all her evil army were waiting. Reveling, mocking voices filled the air as she tied Aslan to the table and plunged her razor-sharp knife into his side. Lucy and Susan buried their faces in their hands, unable to watch. When it was over, the witch and her host of evil demons scuttled off to find the four children and to kill those who had been faithful to Aslan. Lucy and Susan went to the great lion, whose massive body lay silent on the table. They put their arms around him and wept at his side all night, until a faint light began to appear on the eastern edge of the sky, and they turned to leave. Then they heard a great cracking sound coming from behind them. They turned to see the table split into two huge pieces, and Aslan's body gone. "Who's done it?" cried Susan. "What does it mean? Is it more magic?" "Yes," announced the great voice, "it is more magic." Aslan, in all his majesty, then appeared, alive again, his mane glistening in the dawning sun. "There was deeper magic from before the dawn of time," he explained, "of which the White Witch had no knowledge. When a willing victim who had committed no treachery was killed in a traitor's stead, the table would crack and death itself would start working backward." The children rode swiftly on Aslan's back to the witch's castle to set their stone captives free. What a joy it was for Lucy and Mr. Tumnus to be together again. They lost not a moment in celebrating as they all ran to battle against the White Witch and her foul army. They arrived just in time to relieve Peter's weary forces and save Narnia. Edmund, sorry for the trouble he had caused, had fought most bravely and had managed to destroy the White Witch's powerful wand, but he had been wounded severely. Lucy administered the elixir from the diamond vial and healed him, while Aslan exterminated the wicked White Witch once and for all. The children ruled Narnia for many years, until the day they came across a rusted lamppost in the forest. In the next moment, they had appeared in the professor's bedroom, the very moment they had first stepped into the wardrobe.